Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. Happy Monday to everyone. Your episode for May 14th and the coach of the year becomes available. This is your boy, Matt Shook, an AP writer out in Chicago, covering the NBA, Pistons fan my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Talking playoffs once again today. A big upset Sunday in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. We will try to get to the bottom of the confounding Cleveland Cavaliers. Also discussing coach Dwayne Casey, who is now available on the open market. Is he the answer for the Detroit Pistons? We'll be hearing from Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, and also be hearing from Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks to talk about Lloyd Pierce. Man, some real snoozers of hires from some of those building teams. I would expect Toronto to replace Casey with maybe more of a splash, and of course Milwaukee to make a big name hire too. But the Pistons, who knows? Right in the middle of contention or building, but I still think Tom Gores makes a splash somehow with some of these Pistons hires. And the Pistons playoff playback today, we're going to take a look back at one of the more ridiculous games in Pistons playoff history. I know you remember this one during the 2004 title run, which is always a fun year to look back on, obviously. But for the team still playing, the Celtics take game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, 108-83 in Boston against the Cleveland Cavaliers, a Beantown beatdown. Jaylen Brown had 23 points. Former Piston Marcus Morris with 21. Al Horford of Grand Ledge had 20 points. For the Cavs, Kevin Love had 17 to lead the way in the loss. LeBron James, 15 points on 5 of 16 shooting. Didn't look very good for his standards. 9 assists and 7 rebounds as well. The Cavs, what is going on there? Obviously, don't listen to me about insight if you're looking for how, if they're going to play well or win or lose, any predictions, anything like that. Looks like maybe back to the first-round Cavs for now. But as far as supporting players, it was good to see them get Rodney Hood showing signs of life there. He had 11 points off the bench. But if you look at how Indiana played them tough with not much talent there, and then to see Brad Stevens annihilate them in game one, it's a little bit concerning if you are one of these people that might take a look at Dwayne Casey as the Pistons coach. But to see Casey and the Raptors get so de-pantsed by the Cavs, And who knows, you know, maybe Boston wins this series or even makes it easy somehow. I have a feeling that LeBron will have a say in that before all is said and done. But maybe nobody else will have trouble with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and maybe it's just a Raptors thing. But we will see. But moving on today, the Warriors and the Rockets, game one in Houston, a 9 p.m. Eastern start. The series that we've been waiting for. Obviously, I'm still going Warriors in six. I wanted to say five, but my predictions are meaningless anyway, of course. And I get that, but maybe just my non-Cavs predictions are good. Maybe I know what I'm talking about if it's not about the Cavs, who are pretty much confounding everyone at this point. If you could figure out that team for Cleveland, have at it. Let me know. Maybe it's just the matchups thing. Maybe it's something that it's right in front of our faces and that Toronto didn't match up with them and everyone else can kind of handle those role players and everyone else as well. But like back to Houston, 1.5-point favorites tonight on TNT. Looking at the schedule the rest of the week, just so you know, every other game – with games Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, games 1 and 2 for both of those series. And then no basketball Thursday and Friday as we travel for both of the series. And then we're returning back to action for games on Saturday and Sunday nights. Also Saturday over the weekend, the first regular season games for the NBA 2K League. The Pistons GT got the win, topping Heat Check Gaming on Saturday, 70-62. Now, according to what I found, is kind of the league expert, and Brian Mazik of Forbes.com. He says, let's get it. Ramo made the big plays down the stretch for the win for the Pistons GT team, who got out to the 7-0 start and kind of repushed in the second half to get the big victory. Let's get it. Ramo, the first round pick, 16 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists for the gamers from the D. The commentators on the highlights that I watched on Twitter, I didn't watch the game live, but the commentators said, from the 2K League, that they are coming in and playing team ball for the Pistons GT, and that's great to hear. So it sounds like those guys get the Detroit mentality there. They got the Detroit versus everybody slogan, so they got a little chip on their shoulder, which we love here in the Detroit area. So good to see those guys having some early success going to the semifinals in the first weekend with the tournament. there and getting the win over the South Beach Gamers, the Miami Heat Check Gaming, 70-62, big win for Pistons GT there. Back to the real ball, draft lottery, Tuesday night, tomorrow night, 7:30 Eastern here in Chicago at the Hilton. I am not going, but I will be at the Combine Thursday and Friday, so we'll get as much stuff as we can get from there. But as for the lottery, the Pistons traded their pick to the Los Angeles Clippers, but it is top four protected. Obviously, it will not be the fourth pick in the draft, but a 4.5% chance of getting the lottery balls to the ping pong balls to fall their way and getting into the top three, along with a 0.7% chance of getting that top pick in the draft. But we're going to be talking Dwayne Casey today and examine whether he is the fit for the Detroit Pistons. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, then this is your spot. Plus, we got reasonable rates. So email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir! A
little bit later on, we're going to be going back into time for Pistons playoff playback. Since we can't live in the present with the Pistons in the playoffs, we will relive some of the glorious past. Now, how does the guy who was voted by the NBA coaches as Coach of the Year get fired 2 days later? So for some of those answers, let's go first to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors for the insight on how the Dwayne Casey era came to an end in Toronto.
Hey, how's it going? This is Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors, here to break down the breaking news that Dwayne Casey, the 7-year head coach of the Toronto Raptors, has been let go by the team. This coming, of course, after they were swept for the second straight season by LeBron James and the Cavs. And there is a lot to get into with this. It is a decision that is sort of surprising, but at the same time isn't. Of course, like, I don't think anyone could point to the series where the Raptors got swept by the Cavs and say that was all Dwayne Casey's fault. I think a lot of it is just LeBron is LeBron, and he is a powerful singular force who has owned not just the Raptors, but pretty much every other team in the Eastern Conference over the last decade. So I don't think it's a shocker that the Raptors were unable to sort of crack that nut. But I do sort of understand it from the perspective that, you know, he didn't have a great series. It was a tough time. He did not have a defensive game plan that was well crafted to stopping LeBron. And I think that kind of speaks to the larger issue of Dwayne Casey, which has always kind of been the thing with him, is that he's not the best tactical coach in the world. He is a very good, maybe one of the very best in the league at being a big picture relationships guy, and he did an excellent job of that. When he was hired by the Raptors were in the middle of nowhere, absolutely listless as a franchise, and I think the decision to hire him was built, you know, a lot around his ability to sort of connect with players and build a culture and form good habits, and he did that, and the Raptors have, you know, been the most successful they've ever been under Dwayne Casey. 5 years in a row in the playoffs, 50 wins three seasons straight, 59 wins, of course, this season after completely changing over the offense. And, you know, it's really sad to see Dwayne Casey go. He's a fantastic guy. He is really easy to deal with the media, and he did a really great job shepherding this team along from a point that, you know, they really weren't supposed to become this good. You know, they were supposed to blow it up in 2013-14. They traded Rudy Gay. Kyle Lowry was almost out the door. And then, you know, after some friction, him and Casey, Lowry and Casey kind of figured things out, really sort of established a good bond. And, you know, you see where the Raptors are now. People clown them for losing to the Cavs, but no other team has gotten to play the Cavs in the playoffs 3 years in a row in the second or third round. And I think it speaks very highly that the Raptors are the team that keeps getting beaten by LeBron, as weird as that sounds. You know, they've gotten further than most teams in the East. They have won more playoff series than any team in the league aside from the Cavs and Warriors over the last three seasons. So I think it's, you know, you can clown them all you want, but in the grand scheme of things, the Raptors have become one of the more, you know, successful, stable model franchises in the NBA, and a lot of that has to do with Dwayne Casey. So moving on from him does seem like a bit of a strange pivot. At the same time, I do think there is some reason to it. And I think, you know, part of the reason that I think the reflection of Dwayne Casey is that he's been so successful at building the culture and building the team from, you know, the ground up and sort of getting this big picture thing just sort of hammered down to its science. Like, the Raptors are just a really well-run team in the regular season. They win a lot of games for a reason. He's very strict with rotations. He gets guys in roles. They know their roles and they perform them every night. And I think that is honestly sort of the reason that maybe a change is needed, in that the Raptors have grown under Dwayne Casey to a point where They're no longer in need of a big picture coach anymore. They're in need of someone who's more of a tactical wizard, who can kind of look at a series and not take a game or two to adjust, who can kind of, you know, change things up and throw different looks out there that, you know, maybe Dwayne Casey's been a little bit slow to get to in the past. So, you know, I think the next coach is going to be someone who's more of a tactical genius. You know, Jerry Stackhouse is a guy whose name has been thrown out there. I kind of throw Stackhouse just from what I've seen from him at the G League team so far with the Raptors. He's made the finals 2 years in a row, but I'm not sure he's got sort of the tactical acumen that you would want in who's going to be the next head coach. You know, I think he's probably a guy, considering the job he's done as a development coach with the young guys of the G League, you'd probably want for a younger team. And if the Raptors are going to blow it all up and trade away Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Serge Ibaka, Jonas Valanciunas, then maybe Stackhouse is the guy. But I do think Casey getting fired kind of sense, it gives me the sense at least, and this could change, of course, but I do get the sense that, you know, DeRozan, Lowry, you know, whoever else is going to be back next season for one last kick with a new coach. Hopefully a new message comes across. It's a way to sell it to the fan base that you're bringing back the same team that just got swept 2 years in a row, but it's going to have a different coach at the helm. And I do think that coach is going to be more of a tactical guy who is more sort of, you know, lauded for his in-game expertise as opposed to more of a big picture thing. Because I think the Raptors at this point probably believe that their franchise is stable enough and, you know, has come far enough and is strong enough as a culture and just sort of as an organization as a whole, that they can withstand not having a guy like Dwayne Casey to be the head coach who is so good at the big picture stuff. So guys, I'm thinking about Nick Nurse is the lead assistant for the Raptors right now. He was sort of the architect of the offensive change the Raptors did this season, and you know, it worked really well. And his playbook is deep, it's advanced, and he has been on the sort of short list of coaching candidates for a little while. He's interviewed for a couple jobs here and there, so I'd expect him to get a long look. And then also the report coming out from Mark Stein and others is that Mike Budenholzer is also someone that's high on Masai Ujiri's list. People joke about Mike Budenholzer and sort of what happened with the Hawks this season. I think it would make some sense as long as he's not getting any sort of, you know, general managership of the team. I think that's probably what they would want to steer away from. If he's looking for complete power like he wanted in Atlanta, maybe that'll be a difficult sell for him, and I think that would be a difficult sell for the Raptors as well on their end. But you know, a guy like Budenholzer, who, you know, while the Hawks were sort of known as this egalitarian, fun-loving team back in 2015 when they won 60 games, they were the second-best defense in the league. And maybe you can sort of count on Budenholzer to craft a better scheme to maybe go up against LeBron James. Here's the thing. No Raptors coach is changing the Raptors' forces against LeBron James unless LeBron James becomes a worse player, which doesn't seem to be on the horizon anytime soon. This, I think, is very much a PR move to try to sell the team, sell to the fans that the team coming back is going to have at least a bit of a different voice and maybe sell it as some sort of way to get around LeBron. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think any new coach is scheming around LeBron James, but I do kind of understand the pivot here to maybe go from a bigger picture guy to a more tactical guy. I really do think that's what it comes down to. Dwayne Casey was a fantastic coach. He's going to be missed by a lot of people in Toronto, and you know, it's a big risk. There's a good chance that the next coach is not as good a coach as Dwayne Casey, and I think Casey should be scooped up by some other team almost immediately. I would bet like Orlando with Jeff Weltman, who was the Raptors GM last season. Maybe that's a candidate there. And you know, he's going to be picked up soon because he's an excellent coach, and any team that is in sort of disarray and needs to establish a culture should be calling up Dwayne Casey right this minute to get an interview set up. That's all I got on this for now. Check out Locked On Raptors. I'll have a full episode about all of this. We'll get into all the different angles of sort of the optics of the Dwayne Casey firing and sort of where to go from here, what kind of candidate the Raptors should be looking for, and maybe throw some names out there and maybe, you know, sort of hypothesize what else we're going to see from this offseason, which apparently is going to feature lots of change for the Raptors, a team that has not changed a whole lot in a bunch of years. So interesting times ahead for the Raptors. You can hear it all on Locked On Raptors with myself, Sean Woodley, and thanks for tuning in.
So Sean says, not great tactically, some strict rotations for lineups, guys know their roles, which will make many of you happy out there, I know, at least in Twitter land. Thought you guys were concerned about Stan Van Gundy's rotations. I didn't go crazy about the five-man efficiency ratings and stuff like that. I think that sometimes those things get a little overblown. I think you can see a lot of good results when how certain guys play together offensively and defensively, whether that be two- or three-man groups. But sometimes I think that the five-man lineups get a little bit overblown, although when there are huge numbers either way in either direction, obviously you need to take those things into account and throw those good lineups out there and throw those bad lineups out in the garbage. But, you know, the one thing I would criticize Stan Van Gundy with his rotations is how the uncreative way that Ish Smith was used without Reggie Jackson in the lineup with the injury. If you listen to this podcast this year, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I went on and on about how Ishmael should be playing more with the bench unit like he was early in the season, and obviously he needs to be the point guard to get got more minutes, but to throw him out there with the starters, the guys who don't need the offensive help, and to keep him out there not with the bench guys who do need the offensive spark was a bit of a problem. But as Sean Woodley mentioned as well, Nick Nurse, the assistant coach for Toronto, was maybe the guy who architect of some of the offensive changes that the Raptors made in the offseason to go from where they were last year to, you know, an improved regular season team, a team that got the one seed in the Eastern Conference. And Nick Nurse is a guy who's out there for head coaching candidacies as well, and maybe even in Toronto. Who knows? We will see. But as far as a culture change that Dwayne Casey could bring, I don't know that the Pistons are really a candidate for that. But that brings another name into the ether with Dwayne Casey being out there, but it also puts another team ahead of Detroit in the pecking order for like a Mike Budenholzer, for instance. This Toronto, certainly a more desirable job than Detroit right now. And we talked about Jerry Stackhouse a couple weeks back being a candidate for the Pistons job as well, and Budenholzer on this podcast last week. I did like the letter that Casey wrote to the Toronto community about the Canadian culture and about how he was proud to raise his kids there the last few years. And it makes sense. I mean, as a guy who lived in America his whole life and then spent some time in Toronto, you know, Canada is better than America these days, no doubt about that. However you lean politically, I think it's easy to admit that we're a bit of a disaster as a country right now. So probably a little bit more easygoing of a place to live. And nice to expose your kids to something a little bit different. So, like I said, just an incredible human being from everything we could tell about Dwayne Casey. I was impressed when I interviewed him last year here in Chicago before a game as well. Would I approve of the hire if the Pistons brought in Dwayne Casey? Sure. Would I be excited about the Pistons next year with Dwayne Casey as coach? I don't think so. To me, it's Budenholzer, or maybe if you can't get Mike Budenholzer, then you go outside the box a little bit to someone who hasn't had a chance recently. Or if a guy like Casey, who was in a similar mold, took a step back for a year and analyzes the league a little bit from the outside, kind of like Rick Carlisle did before coming to Detroit, I would prefer that over a guy who was dealing with losing his job, finding a new life and new motivation and new challenges in one offseason, staying in the conference, you know, not really having a fresh perspective on things. Turning to Brishan Miller, one of our regular commenters on Twitter, he said he's been following Toronto big for the past few years on Twitter yesterday. He echoed what Sean Woodley said about the great culture, but maybe not being great with playoff adjustments. Obviously, tough to adjust to LeBron James, no matter who you're coaching or who your players are. He said that Brishan said that it'd be good as the Pistons culture has slipped with Stan Van Gundy a bit. And I don't know. I'm not sure that culture was the problem. I really sense genuine love for Stan Van Gundy from the players, and at least the utmost amount of respect, which was a little bit surprising from the outside, especially given that the way that things unraveled in Orlando, and obviously you can pin a lot of that on Dwight Howard and his problems throughout his career. But the way that you know Stan Van Gundy's kind of been made fun of around the league, that Evan Turner Twitter instance from this year kind of comes to mind. I thought that culture and the respect for Stan Van Gundy and his overbearing ways could become a little bit too much over the years, especially as we go into what was year four last year. But I sense that it didn't, and that wasn't the problem, although maybe it had a chance of getting that way in the future. Some of that is his willingness to speak about social issues. And I know, obviously, he's on the same side of many of the debates as the players. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, Trump people on Facebook out there who say that they don't go to games because of the way that Stan Van Gundy talks about his liberal politics. And you're always going to get some kind of that when you speak out about things. But I think that the way that he is has kind of helped him endear him to himself, to his players. And so it's not really an easy guy to pivot from if you're talking about moving on from Stan Van Gundy. You know, obviously in sports, we talk about hiring the opposite kind of guy that your last coach was. If you had a player's coach, go get, you know, a real tough guy. It's tough on them and vice versa. Well, I think it's kind of hard to peg what Stan Van Gundy was great at and what he was not great at. So to find the opposite of that is really kind of difficult right now. Kind of pivoting a little bit, I saw the article from Vince Ellis of the Free Press over the weekend saying that maybe the coaching market might be moving so fast that the Pistons, in their position where they came into the game so late, they might have to hire a coach before they hire a general manager or president in the front office. And I think that if you're in love with Budenholzer, like maybe Tom Gores is, or kind of like I am sometimes on this podcast, if he's maybe the only guy who you might consider doing that with. And even then, it's obviously not an ideal option. If you can't get Mike, and if he's not your clear-cut choice for number one or whoever else it is, I think you got to go with the traditional route of getting that president and GM, if possible. Like I said, now, if you've got a clear-cut number one coach and you're owning this team right now and you think time might be an issue, maybe you get that done right away. But I think we'll examine that if it happens kind of as it happens in a case-by-case kind of basis. But we would like to see the team move quickly, obviously, and I would expect some movement certainly this week. So we'll see. You know, we'll see if Dwayne Casey becomes more of a factor in this job search or not. But today in Pistons playoff, coming back a little bit here, since we can't live in the present, we'll be reliving the past. But also a new look in Detroit with the Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Patricia. Obviously, all the controversy surrounding him this past weekend. Check out Matt Derry of Detroit Radio with that. All sorts of podcasts, NBA, NFL, MLB podcasts as well here on the Locked On Network. Your team every day. There was another coaching hire over the weekend in the NBA, and let's go to Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks to talk about Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta.
Hello, friends. I am Brad Rowland of the Locked On Hawks podcast, and the Atlanta Hawks officially have a new basketball coach as of Friday evening, as the team announced that they have an agreement in principle with former Philadelphia 76ers assistant coach Lloyd Pierce, who will be a first-time head coach in the NBA. That comes on the heels of the team parting ways with Mike Budenholzer back on April 25th, and since that point, the Hawks did a pretty extensive search. They interviewed seven candidates. After that, they narrowed things down to three or four finalists, but at the same time, that, you know, over the last few days, it certainly appeared as if they were going to center on Lloyd Pierce. Of course, the Sixers were still involved in the playoffs until late in the week here, but at the same time, there was plenty of meetings. Apparently, Pierce met with the Hawks on three different occasions, including meetings with Tony Ressler, the team's owner, and the GM, Travis Schlink. And at the end of the process, both Adrian Wojnarowski and Mark Spears at ESPN broke the news of the hire on Friday evening, and here we are. And after that, it had been basically a less than well-kept secret in the last several hours of the candidacy transitioning into that offer, and of course the acceptance on the part of Pierce. He brings with him a strong player development background in Philadelphia and several other stops before that, including Golden State, in which he worked with Travis Schlenk briefly. Schlenk was, of course, an assistant under Bob Myers in the front office with the Warriors before taking over for the Hawks. And Atlanta clearly was targeting a young coach to help lead their rebuild. Pierce was actually, ironically, hired on his 42nd birthday on Friday, and he's going to be tasked with doing just that in the future for the Hawks as this team transitions. Of course, they already spent most of this season rebuilding, after a 10-year playoff streak came to an end. But with Budenholzer out the door and Pierce in the door, a lot of sort of overturning and sort of overhauling the way that the team's going to be operating. And of course, everyone is pretty upbeat when it comes to this hire. It's definitely the case with any first-time coaching hire that the jury has to be out at this point still, with the ability of Pierce to manage all of the overall tasks associated with being a head coach for the first time, managing a staff, all that fun stuff. But all of the buzz out of Philadelphia is very positive about his defensive approach, his player relations, his player development. A lot of congratulations coming to Pierce, I should say, from around the league, guys who played for him in Philadelphia and other spots reaching out but publicly on social media to congratulate Pierce, and the Hawks are very, very pleased with their hire. He'll be introduced on Monday, but in the meantime, the Hawks have a new head coach, and right in time for a very, very pivotal moment at the NBA draft lottery on Tuesday. Pierce will be in place for that point in time, and the Hawks can look sort of cohesively at the future in Atlanta. So a lot of things to be excited about in the middle of a rebuild for the Hawks, and Lloyd Pierce will be the head coach beginning right about now.
So there's the lowdown from Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks on Lloyd Pierce. But today in Pistons playoff playback, we're going back to 2004. The Pistons got swept by the New Jersey Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2003 during a surprise run to that third round, but got another shot at Jason Kidd and the Nets in the second round in 2004. The teams held serve through the first four games, splitting, going 2-2 in those ones. But in Game 5 on May 14th, 2004, 14 years ago today, Brian Scalabrine and the Nets seemingly took control of the series in a ridiculous game in the Palace of Auburn Hills. The Pistons trailed big early, but Mr. Big Shot Chauncey Billups brought them back with a great second half, but still things seemed lost when Kerry Kittles made a free throw with 2.9 seconds left to go up by three, and that's when Chauncey took the inbounds pass from Rasheed Wallace and two steps in front of half court, threw it one in off the glass at the buzzer to tie it up. The Palace goes crazy, and we've got overtime. And overtime, however, it was Brian Scalabrine, and the game would go to a second, and then a third overtime, Pistons losing 127-120 at home despite Chauncey's miracle shot. Scalabrine had 9 points combined in the three overtimes. He had 17 in the game. Little used reserve at that time who just caught fire for the Nets there. A couple of huge threes down the stretch. He was big time. He went 4-for-4 from three during the game. Led the Nets to a position of putting the Pistons on the brink. But as we know, they would not finish the job. Detroit would win games 6 and 7 and then go on to face the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, of course, we will have more on that series later on Pistons Playoff Playback. But give us a follow on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And also, check out the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. And subscribe to us on iTunes, give us a rating and review there as well. And I got some breaking news to pass along. Not really breaking news, but ESPN alert from Woj says, former Hawks head coach Mike Budenholzer emerges as focus of Bucks and Raptors head coach searches. So we will see exactly what that means as the week continues here on Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening, everyone.